I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Steve Peters. He is a composer and sound artist. He's in residence at the Santa Fe Art Institute. And tonight, Monday at 6 o'clock, he is giving a lecture at Tipton Hall on the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Now, composer and sound artist, tell our listeners what we mean by sound artist.
Okay, that's kind of a tricky distinction. I call myself a composer because sometimes I compose things that most people actually recognize as music. They have musical instruments, and there's pitches and rhythms and things like that. The sound art, for me, I mean, you can ask 20 different people and get 20 different answers, but for me, it's a way of making a distinction between that sort of more obviously musical stuff that I do and the work that I do that is more about just sort of sound in and of itself. A lot of times I'm working with recordings of environmental sound, or I'm using, you know, text and all of these different things combined to make pieces that aren't really about music necessarily at all. When I'm making them, I think the same part of my brain that does music is at work. But I think for most people, if it's too much work for me to try to convince them that those things are music.
Right.
and
do you think they are?
I think of them musically, you know. I mean, like I say, while I'm working on them, I'm thinking about it with the same part of my brain that does music. But, you know, and I have many of the same compositional concerns about how is this developing and how are these different parts weaving together and all of those things. But I think for a lot of people, their idea of music is, you know, songs or melodies or, you know, musical instruments and, you know, things that you can tap your foot to. And I just find talking about it in terms of sound is kind of a more inviting way for them to approach it without having to make this huge conceptual leap.
What are some of the examples of the kind of sound that you record?
Well, a lot of the pieces that I do are site-specific sound installations or environments where I'm working directly with sounds from the places that I'm going to then feed this sound environment back into. So a lot of times I might be just making recordings of the empty space. For instance, I have a piece up at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design right now in the sort of entryway of the Benildes Hall Music Building.
Right.
And it's based entirely on a one-hour recording of that space when the building was closed. And so there's nothing, you know, it's a recording of nothing, basically.
But nothing turns out to be quite rich.
Well, yeah, because the further you dig into nothing, the more you find lurking there. So I'm basically taking this recording of the empty room tone and heavily filtering it to pull out the sort of dormant, resonant frequencies of the space that are kind of always there, but very, very quiet, you know, way too quiet for us to hear. And then that's used to kind of pull these very beautiful sort of drones out of it, and then I work with these drones to make the piece. And I try to think about those kinds of pieces, because I've done a bunch of these ones of recordings of the empty spaces. I think about them in terms of light rather than just sound, because there's this whole continuum of the spectrum of vibration. So I kind of think of these in terms of being part of this spectrum and kind of making those vibrations perceptible to people.
There was a wonderful piece that you did in Corrales some years ago. Maybe you could just describe that. It was very moving to me, and I didn't expect it to be nearly as moving as it was.
That was a piece called Alchemy, and it was done in collaboration with a visual artist named Christine Wallers, who's a good friend of mine who now lives in Chicago. But at the time, we were both living in Albuquerque. And this was kind of in the early days, like, you know, before people used the internet for everything and before blogging and, you know, like, nobody had DSL.
Right.
You know? So we sort of sent out postcards to people and invited people to send us their ideas, their kind of wishes for how the world might change in ways that would be good for everyone. And then we recorded, I think, 24 people reading all of those responses. We got like 300-something responses from all over the world. And this was not using email or, you know, this was just word of mouth.
Like postcards and
postcards and, you know, flyers and things like that. And so we had these 24 people read them. And then we had made some special brass bowls that were, I don't know, maybe 2.5, 3 feet across and about 8 inches deep. And they sat on steel plates that had holes cut out of them for the bowls to rest in. And then those were hung from the ceiling of the old church in Corrales, the San Isidro church. And the sound was then piped through the bowls with special transducers that attached to the undersides of the bowls and turned them into speakers.
And
it moved through the space.
And what was so interesting to me was there was this sense of mystery in the whole thing, and you couldn't really quite decipher the sound, and yet it was weirdly emotional.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we were going for.
Well, and this is the thing. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I've known you for over 20 years, and I used to work in a space in Boston called Mobius where there are all kinds of sound artists, and that was where I was introduced to the term sound art. And at first, being a complete novice to this genre, so to speak, I thought, this is just silly. And then...
Well, sometimes,
and
yes.
And sometimes maybe it is. But then what would happen would be, a lot of the time, there was a depth to it that it was very hard, and to me still is very hard to explain. And some of it has to do with slowing your mind down, but some of it is really the craft of what you guys are up to actually meets its target, so to speak,
in
the listeners.
It's like any medium. I mean, there's silly pop songs, and there's really moving great pop songs, and there's, you know, silly movies, and there's movies that, you know, change your life. So sound artists are no different in that respect.
So what have you been doing over the last few years? You moved up to Seattle.
I moved to Seattle in 2004. That was right after I kind of finished a couple of big projects here. I did two pieces at the Santa Fe Art Institute at the time. I had done this huge land-based piece out at the land and art site out near Mountain Air. That was like a piece that took me several years to finish, and finally got that all done and packed up and left town in like the space of one weekend or something. It was crazy. And then since then, Seattle's been good. I run a nonprofit there called Non Sequitur, and we produce a concert series called the Wayward Music Series at the Chapel Performance Space in a place called the Good Shepherd Center, which is a retired home for orphaned and wayward girls that was run by nuns until the 70s or something.
Wow.
And now it's owned by Historic Seattle, which is a nonprofit developer that saves old buildings that are in danger of being torn down, and they fix them up and give them a new life. So it's a wonderful community of nonprofit organizations, and there's a senior center and a school and all kinds of great organizations there. And so we're in the chapel, what used to be the chapel for this Catholic girls' boarding school.
And hence the name Wayward
US
Music Series.
Built-in title.
We're talking to sound artist and composer Steve Peters. So tonight you're going to be giving a lecture called Making a Place to Listen. What's that about?
Well, Making a Place to Listen is just sort of a way to talk about the work that I've been doing for the last, I don't know, 15 years or something, and to just kind of introduce it to people and, you know, show and tell. Hi, this is what I do. So it'll be kind of a breezy overview of projects that I've been working on for a while. And really, it's about this idea of, like, in 2002, I quit performing because I didn't really enjoy it very much. And the doing the sound environments thing was so much more gratifying to me that I really wanted to focus on that. And what's so appealing about that is the idea of, instead of making this kind of event, for better, lack of a better word, you're making a place where people go and have a very specific kind of experience in that place and with that place, and you're kind of drawing their attention to where they are and encouraging them to kind of slow down and really be present with where they are. And so I think of myself as a placemaker these days with sound.
With sound. And you're also giving a workshop the following weekend, Saturday and Sunday, October 13th and 14th, called Listening, Finding, Giving, Receiving. What will you be doing besides those four things?
Those four things in various combinations. Well, the first day will be all about the listening part, and we will be doing some pretty intensive, like contemplative listening sessions in different kinds of ways. I mean, there's a whole field called acoustic ecology that I am tied into that's kind of, it's a multidisciplinary field. And actually, Santa Fe is a big center for that. There's some major acoustic ecology people here. The Acoustic Ecology Institute, run by Jim Cummings, is here.
What does
David
that mean?
Dunn
Explain that term.
It's a multidisciplinary way of looking at the role of sound in various aspects of our lives. So some people come to it from point of, art and music, and some people come to it from architecture. Some people come to it from city planning or from the sciences, and sort of looking at the sonic environment that we create and how that interacts with the sonic environment that exists naturally. So it's looking at things like how the sound world changes over time as a result of human activity. It can encompass anything from the issues of sonar effects on cetaceans,
which is one of the saddest things ever.
To
what is it? Navy sonar making whales deaf because they're sending these things underwater.
Yeah, it's insane.
Oh God.
It can also include like sound design for buildings, like acoustical design. It can include, like, David Dunn has done all this amazing work here with bark beetles.
Yes.
And, you know, so really all over the map.
Yeah, or things like...
Really interesting field. Like,
I was reading somewhere a while back that certain kinds of birds were doing their mating calls at night because the cities were too noisy during the day.
Mm-hmm.
They'd changed from diurnal to nocturnal animals.
Yeah. So, anyway, a lot of the kind of listening practices that I will be presenting to people at this workshop are kind of coming at it with a foot in the acoustic ecology world and a foot in the musical world. And, Pauline Oliveros has her whole deep listening thing, which I haven't studied, but she's a friend and I certainly refer to her. You know, I can't deny that there's an influence. And we'll be doing sound walks where we're walking around and as a group and individually and listening to the environment and kind of noting how it affects us and how we affect it. So that's day one. Day two will be about then as a group making sounds. So first day is about listening. Second day is about making and how we kind of add sounds to the environment. And I'm going to be asking people to bring objects that are not musical instruments that make sounds that might possibly be interesting, and we will figure out ways to interact with each other. And I have no idea what will happen. So I'm just curious.
Now, when you go into a place like the Santa Fe Art Institute, you're here for a month as a resident. I mean, there are people who are photographers or visual artists who come in and start taking pictures or sketching. You start taking sound recordings of the space that you're in. They're on your blog, and it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how I make sense of the world, in a way. It's like, okay, here I am. Let's find out what I'm doing here and what there is to hear, and, you know, then I'll respond accordingly.
But a lot of time it's things that people either, most people wouldn't notice, or even if they notice it, they wouldn't really give it attention and think about it. Like the sound of a broom sweeping.
Yeah, and, you know, that stuff, I kind of feel like as many levels as there are in life that we can pay attention to, the more that enhances our experience of life. And we filter out so much and we're numbed to so much that what I hope is to kind of encourage this heightened level of attention to just what's going on around us, and you know, kind of increased level of awareness and appreciation. And you know, there's a lot of stuff that we sort of assume is not interesting, and when you turn your attention to it, you find out it's actually quite interesting. And not only is it quite interesting, it's part of your life, so it's a good thing that it's quite interesting. So.
And we hope that our listeners to this program find the background noise in the Santa Fe Baking Company
not entirely
uninteresting. Sometimes it's a bit much.
I'm totally enjoying it.
So you're giving a lecture tonight, and after the lecture is the reception for The Very Rich Hours. What's that about?
The Very Rich Hours is another piece that I did in the old church in Corrales. I think back in 2009, there was this huge multi-city, multi-venue effort called Land/Art that was kind of spearheaded by Suzanne Sparge down at 516 Arts in Albuquerque. And, you know, I mean, she interfaced with everybody, and it was this huge deal. And part of that was they commissioned me to make a piece, and originally it was going to be in the Rio Grande Nature Center, but that didn't work out, and so we moved it to the old church in Corrales, which I had worked in before with the piece with Christine, and it's a beautiful space. And that piece was kind of coming together of a few different strands of my previous work, and also kind of a culmination in a way. I had invited 10 different friends to choose places that were really meaningful to them personally, that they felt a deep connection with. And I went there with them and recorded them, and I basically just asked them to describe what they were experiencing there in real time. I don't want their opinions. I don't want history. I don't want stories. I don't want them to just tell me, like, what they see now and what's happening right now.
Which is probably tricky business for
some. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how easily I could do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So each of them, you know, I've recorded for like an hour or something, and I cut them all down to about 5 minutes because, you know, otherwise it's crazy. So those were all laid into a bed of environmental sound recordings that I had collected in New Mexico during the 15 years that I had lived here. And that was kind of a way to, like, bring all this work together. And then there was a third layer in there, which was voices singing the Latin names of the endangered species list for New Mexico.
Right.
So it was kind of this weaving together of singing voices and speaking voices and environmental sounds, and it was projected in this kind of 8-channel array in the church. And I had this local craftsman make these very beautiful wooden benches for the church, and it was lovely. So I will be reprising that here in a much more stripped-down version.
And where will it actually be?
It'll be in the courtyard at the Santa Fe Art Institute. Like, there's an interior courtyard. Once you go in the building, then you can get into it, and it's totally enclosed. And there's this sort of little plaza in there, and it will be there.
And it'll be there for the whole month.
It will be there the whole month.
I think it's funny when you think about social change and endangered species and things like that, and all kinds of environmental problems and problems that our society is facing, and the kind of arguments that people have that don't go anywhere because people are polarized. They take one side and they take the other side. And then you hear the Latin names and nobody's really got an agenda, but it goes into your heart in a different way than an argument.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important to think about it in that way.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in arguing with anybody. You know, I don't find that's usually a productive way of interacting with people. I mean, sometimes it's inevitable, but I try to avoid it, especially in the work. And Latin is, well, I mean, Latin is amazing. I mean, first of all, it's like made to be sung. It's got all these beautiful, long, open vowels in it, and then you just go on and on forever. It's like, it's wonderful. But it's also really interesting to me because, on the one hand, it's this sacred language associated with the church, And on the other hand, it's the language of science and of naming things. And to somehow use it in this way is like this way of bridging those two things that are often considered to be opposed to each other.
Right.
And that's appealing to me. So I've done three pieces with Latin now that I don't know how many more I can keep doing and have it be interesting. But so far, I can listen to people sing in Latin all day.
Steve Peters is a composer and sound artist. And once again, at 6 o'clock tonight, he will be at Tipton Hall at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design doing a lecture called Making a Place to Listen, sponsored by the Santa Fe Art Institute, where he is in residence all this month. For more information, sfai.org. And his website is steve-peters.blogspot.com. Shall we listen to a little bit of your work before we go today?
Sure.
What shall we hear?
Let's see. We could hear a little bit of The Very Rich Hours, I guess.
Okay, let's do that. Steve, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Core.